Folks, please follow us on Instagram at Speakeasy Black Pod. That's SpeakEasyBLKPOD. There you can message us with any feedback. We welcome it all. For our Apple users listening through the podcast app, please subscribe, rate, and leave a review. The reviews really help us expand the audience. And now we're available on every platform, including Pandora Podcast.
Mic check 1 2 1 2. Mic check 1 2 1 2. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Coming through.
Yes, sir.
Speakeasy Black Renaissance Podcast. We kicking in with my LBs today. Episode 14. Here we go.
Yeah, D Block. Greenland blast that, daddy. Everywhere we go, people wanna know who we are.
I know what time it is.
Yeah. So we tell them,
yes, sir.
This is
the type of vibe.
Mighty, okay. Mighty.
What type of shit we on today?
Everywhere we go, people wanna know who we are.
Yeah.
So we tell them, this
shout
is
out to Yonkers.
The block. Mighty, mighty D block. Everywhere we go.
D block, you bitch ass niggas.
Yo, the revolver, the Maddie's cool. Knife game like daddy cool. Since Valley shoes, this is real live street shit.
Truest and the deepest.
No niggas that go to jail just to get their teeth fixed. Think I give a fuck what you heard say. When I got the nigga that you trying to be, watching my wordplay. Now everybody wanna be Pac till they ass really get popped and they die on the third day. The Desi got a beautiful ring. Not gonna hit any one of y'all. Options a beautiful thing. Body is finished. Maybe they can save the tooth.
Call me Kiss or call me the Black Bay Roof.
That many hits, fuck that. That many bricks,
yeah.
D-block. That many niggas, gas to your lips. And my dope is two-tone, but I had to change my spot, cause it turned into a drug-free school.
Let's
so
go.
J-A-D-A. Top 5 dead or alive, and that's just off one LP.
Word up, cheek mooch up in your motherfucking chest. Walk with me. Y'all know what this is. D-block. Oh yeah, by the way, this is the remix. Woo!
You can kiss your ass goodbye.
D-block.
Da-da-da. Da-da-da.
The flow is here, the dough is here. They gon' call us the hardest remix of the year. The wrist is sickle, the nine is nickel. The inside tan, the outer pickle. The Dutch is rolled, the yak is poured. You running your mouth, I'm getting you jawed. I'm waving the blade, I'm telling you back up. You empty your pockets, I'm picking your pack up.
Give me that.
You can act stupid if you wanna. Like you don't know what block I'm in front of. I'm out in New York or down in the South. I'm out in the trap with gold in my mouth. They book me for the clubs in the hood,
yeah.
Where niggas scared to go, but she loots good.
D-block.
It's loaded when I get out the car. Like,
you can kiss your ass goodbye.
Fuck the frail shit. Cause when my coat come in, they gotta use the scale that they weigh the whales with. Carlton's on the
this
Jeep.
Is my favorite
gotta
shit right
the prototype. Hope you get the picture, but you just can't fold up like Terminators. Niggas maybe kicking down the door and we burning niggas naked.
The house costs a million. Sitting on the beach and the only thing I know if it's furnished, I'ma take it.
My bathtub lift up, my walls do a 360. We got the shit that the government got. Talking money, then you rubbing the spot.
Real niggas say that they be wild. We on the Cayman Islands, on the yacht with our favorite albums.
A bad hole and a plate of salmon. Smoking and drinking, nigga, is you thinking that our fate is valid?
I love my nigga for the fact that he real. And nobody on the back of the square.
What? And if you face a capital pun, pass me a gun. And I'ma give you time to run while I rapidly peel. We gon' make it, we gon' make it, we gon' make it. We gon' make it.
Folks, welcome. Speakeasy Black Renaissance Podcast, episode 14. Chris JB, what's good?
Yo, what's going on, bro? Yo, it's been a minute, bro.
It's been a minute, but we back like we never left.
Like Mace?
Oh, welcome
call back. Him. Call him in the building.
Welcome back.
What's up?
Welcome back.
Yo, y'all here?
I heard Harlem people saying they from Yonkers now.
Yo, oh, chill! Don't do that to me. Don't do that to me. Not, yeah.
Yo, before it gets messy, let me introduce him.
Word up!
Him. Yo, we have Devontae and Sanji in the room with us right now. Let's go.
Yeah, what's goody?
Sanji, what's going on, brother? What's good?
What's up, man? What's up, bro? LB, it's good to see y'all.
Word, word. Devontae, what's going on, man?
Man, living life, man. Pleasure to be here. I'm happy.
And we definitely glad to have y'all. So for those that are unfamiliar with our guests, Devontae and Sanji, these are my line brothers. We plagued together back in fall 11. And we
many moons ago.
Many moons ago. Almost 10 years ago now. It's been almost 10 years. We coming up on 10 years in the game.
Somebody said call us old heads.
somebody said that's the best line out of KZ.
Oh, easily. but we're going to get into that in just a few seconds. That's going to be the focus of our discussion for today. But yo, before we get into the business, yo, let's talk about this versus though.
Man.
D-Block.
Why Jada had to do it to them like that?
Son.
I mean,
he wasn't ready.
Oh, man.
That was nasty, Sanji.
Yo, and you know, the truth of the matter is, like, I think anyone that was paying attention should have saw this shit coming a mile away. Because first, like last year when Jada went at it with Fab, who's an excellent MC, got an excellent catalog, got all types of records, got the street records, he got pop hits, he got R&B joints. And Jada made Fab look foolish. Real talk. So, like, we already knew coming into this battle, like, Kiss is a killer. Like, he was coming in super competitive, super prepared. And then he had his team behind him this time around as well. Like, we really should have seen this coming. And, yeah, I really thought it was interesting how it almost seemed like a bit of a generational divide with those that thought the Locks were going to win. I was typically seeing the 35 and over crowd. And then, you know, younger than 35 thought that Dipset had it.
That's true.
Yeah, I would agree. I think younger than 35, you remember the hits, right? Remember the hits of Dipset, but not many people remember the lyricism that Jada can bring.
Yeah, it was funny because I think you're absolutely right. When I first started getting into hip hop, right? Specifically speaking about the Locks, they were mostly into their solo careers and having solo ventures by that point, right? So I'm thinking probably like early 2000s or so, like that, right? And Jada Kiss obviously having the most successful solo career of the three. But that was, I guess, Dipset's heyday, right? But if you go back and look at the catalog, the Locks had a very successful career as a group going back to the Bad Boy era. And it just seems like that went over the head and wasn't accounted for by so many people within our age range, you know, being under 35, that was analyzing this battle going forward.
I think it has a big thing to do with Diddy. A big thing to do with Diddy, because if you think about the Locks versus Dipset, like during the early 2000s, Dipset was thriving because Rockefeller was thriving, right? And then Bad Boy was going downhill because Diddy was thriving. It was all about the Diddy show. So I think that's what played a big factor, because if people don't know that Jada Kiss and Styles P wrote everything.
Yeah, 100%. And that's what it was funny. So I was talking with two of my homies. And they had the nerve to tell me that, oh, the Locks can't play All About the Benjamins. That's not their song. I'm like, wait a minute. That's kind of their song. Because, like, when you consider that Kiss wrote Diddy's verse, and that's one of the most famous drops in all of it. Like, what y'all going to do? Want to be ballers? Like, that's one of the most famous drops in all of hip hop. And that's Kiss's pen. And then he had a fire verse himself that followed it right up. And then Sheik had a fire. I want to cop those. Colossal size. So it's, yeah, like, people was definitely sleeping on the contributions that they made to the golden age of the Bad Boy era, right? But I think particularly about, you know, when you got into the verses and how that played out, I think it was clear from jump, the Locks just had a stage presence where it looked like it looked like they had been touring together for months.
They did their homework.
They were just so well prepared.
They were staying at the school helping the teacher dust out the shit that the erasers.
And it became second nature to them, because it's just like, I mean, it's just like practice, right?
Preparation.
Piss poor practice leads to piss poor effort. So, you know, Dipset, I don't think they practice for that at all.
100%.
They're on that Mariah Carey shit. And they still got it and just show up.
I don't want to make it seem like I'm coming up here trying to hate on Dipset, because I got nothing but love and respect for Dipset. But at the same time, I like trying to give an honest critique, an honest opinion of the music and the performance. I think what we saw from the Lox was a genuine friendship and a genuine brotherhood that came out and shined through. That I don't think that they're capable of that type of performance. If it like they knew each other, like I'm just thinking about even how like the nature of MCing goes, right? Like you up there, you performing, you giving it 100%. You can't go 100 all of the time, right? And it's like Styles knowing exactly when Jada was gonna run out of breath, so he's doubling back and essentially popping in for him to like make sure that the performance stays 100%. When his brother can't carry it anymore, right? Knowing the lyrics and knowing the verses that Q didn't write, but your mans did, right? Like these are the type of things that the Lox had over Dipset, in addition to having, I thought, a superior music catalog.
Teamwork, an unforgotten, powerful tool.
Where it's just, you know, you can see the chemistry, the chemistry of people essentially, you know, shooting in the gym together, you know, one line, people going through things together. You could tell they put in time. They know how to vibe off each other without even having to think. They could just feel it, and it shows.
That's the big fact. It's that cohesiveness, that cohesion. You feel me?
Facts. And it's like, you can't fake those type of things. Like, it's all of the money in the world, all of the status in the world, all of the albums sold and things like that, you can't fake chemistry. You can't fake cohesion. And it was abundantly clear that the Lox had it and Dipset didn't.
I want to do research on how long they've known each other, like before they blew up, because that's something else that you saw, that like shit went past the money, past the fame, past the lights, past the stage. It was like, it seemed like they were like literally one person.
Okay, so the way I heard it is, so y'all know, like I grew up in Mount Vernon. And for a few years, I was playing in a drum corps in Yonkers and Slow Brown Projects, which is the projects where the Lox are from, right? And the way I'm hearing it was that they were friends going back into their like early teens and childhood. And like, yo, keep it real. This is my bias because I didn't spend too much time in Slow Bomb. But from what I can remember, Slow Bomb Projects is the worst projects I've ever been in. Like, just that. That shit looked run down. Like, I remember, seeing an apartment building. In the project, seeing one of the apartments where the shit was literally just, like, bombed out. Like, the whole apartment was essentially, like, an abandoned spot where junkies went to get high. Like, it was seeing all types of crazy things in Slow Bomb. So it's like, when you come from that and you essentially got it out of the mud with these dudes, it's real. I don't want to say it's easy, but it comes naturally to like performing music together. Is like, this is light work.
Word. And what people forget, like, you know, Dipset, you know, Harlem, all that stuff, you know, Harlem on the map, Harlem world. But people forget that Dipset was not seen eye to eye for a minute. So like Jim Jones and Cameron and Joels wasn't really agreeing. So that definitely affects. So when you have a team that can't communicate, can't be on the same terms, it's not gonna work out.
Yeah, that's great facts. And I don't wanna say that because and like these are definitely some of the things that we're gonna get to start talking about in a minute when we target our conversation specifically around Alpha and Black Greek Life. But I'm sure the Lox definitely have had their problems and their personal stripes and issues and things like that. But I think at least what it appears from the outside looking in is that they worked through them and didn't allow it to linger. Right. And create any type of lasting conflict that threatened, you know, the significance and the integrity of those relationships.
Well, that's the magic right there, Q. Like, we could only speculate. Nothing has ever come out about any issues they've ever had.
Yeah.
And I think that's all a part of it. It's all a part of the teamwork. It's all a part of the brotherhood. It's all a part of, you know, you're my boy, and we're going to ride this out to the end. No one needs to know about it.
Yeah, that's facts.
All right, bro. So, talking about all of this brotherhood, the camaraderie, the dominating performance, the preparedness, the stage presence of the Lox. I know you bros have an anniversary coming up, a very important one, 10 years. How can we relate the Lox and what we saw on that stage to the anniversary that's about to come up for y'all?
Before we get into the meat of our discussion for today, let me start off by saying a few things, right? Understand that we are having this conversation with the intent on, this is not meant to bash Alpha. This is not meant to bash Black Greek life and fraternity culture at all. We're having this type of intentional discussion with the hope and the focus on being better brothers, being better men, and being better people. And in order to do that, we have to be able to confront issues and shortcomings with unflinching courageousness and be able to deal with the messiness of it with the hope of moving forward productively, right? And I think that, again, tying it back to the music discussion, like, no one's not saying the Lox didn't have their issues, right? Because, like, one of the things that easily comes to mind is, which is the case with most hip-hop groups, right? Like, you got to deal with that narrative of, like, oh, who's the best MC in the group?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the best rapper in the group, right? Like, oh, like, he's outdoing this person and stuff like that, right? And not allowing those type of toxic influences to deter from the ultimate goal, right?
Word. That's the ultimate manipulation.
Sure, 100%. And it's like, group dynamics frequently deal with those type of things, which I'm sure we're going to get into in a second, right? But it's the point is being able to deal with those type of issues and not let it sidetrack you and detract you from what you're trying to accomplish, right? And that's why we're coming together to have this type of conversation, right? So this is not about gossiping. This is not about a tell-all. We're not trying to do no Bernie Sand shit. We're trying to have a productive conversation 10 years later with the point of being reflective, self-critical, and contributing to the better making of men.
Yep.
So yeah, so we coming up on our 10-year anniversary. Be 10 years. But let's talk a little bit about the summer of 2011 that frankly brought the four of us together in a very unique way, with our common goal, our common objective being Alpha. Right. So, I'll just start off a little bit about what I remember from that summer, and then we can toss it around, and I'm interested to see what y'all brothers have to say. Right.
The most underrated summer.
Yo, I don't think it was underrated. The summer before we got put on was one of the most lit summers ever. Right. Like, I very few summers have yet to even come close to the shit was wild, man. Like, it seemed like there was a party or a barbecue every weekend. Like, we was all over the tri-state area. Mad. Yeah.
Torn.
Did it start? You guys could correct me, but did it start with that the KZ barbecue? I think it was with the Betas towards the end of the that semester.
You might be right.
I think.
Like, because so. Yeah, right. Because it might have really started like in the like the tail end of the spring,
mm-hmm.
right, of 2011 yep. at the end of the school academic year, and then it just. From there on.
Yeah, it had to be that because I clearly remember that barbecue on the campus and none of us were alphas yet. So it had to be that.
And like I'm thinking about is like how it started way back 2011. Like it's 2021, that's 10 years from now. That's 10 years ago, excuse me. And I'm thinking about like, you know, you was talking about the Lox. I know they started like in 94 and it's like about to be 20 years from them. So I can only imagine like our conversation like 10 years from now too, like we're gonna be like, yo, you remember this time? So it goes back to say like that cohesiveness, that where you started from, how we grew from that and developed as men to become a brotherhood. And it's important, especially in the Black community. Like I feel like all groups, no matter what it is, like rap group, dance group, fraternities, sororities, whatever it is, they always go back to like that brotherhood, that sisterhood, where Black people really focus on that unification to establish what they are in a sense of that unity. That unity, mm-hmm. right? That unity is so key. So key. I'm over here smoking the hoop and shit. Don't mind me.
Nah, that's all right. That's all right.
Definitely bring up right. That unity, I think at the end of the day, you know, that unity is what holds your line together. You know, you have no one else but the people, your brothers to your left and your right to hold you down and get you through those long nights. You know, if you don't find a way to build that bond, then it's not going to go the way that you intend. And, you know, I think that's the biggest correlation you can make if you're still keeping with the locks, you know, analogy or reference, is they clearly spent time cultivating and, you know, grinding together to produce what they did.
Yeah.
And you could definitely tell the difference.
Yeah. 100%. I think a lot of that started for us in that summer of 2011. Because it's like, so me, Sungji, and Devante knew each other our freshman year. But it was definitely that summer where we really started to bond and started to get close in different ways and like set the foundation for a brotherhood that's lasted and survived more than 10 years later. And then I think that summer was also when we started to get into know Chris more as well. And yeah, most of it was shit, but like we was just vibing, going like all of these damn barbecues. Like, yo, like legit, there was like a barbecue or a party every weekend. Like we was in Jersey, we was in Harlem, we was,
and he had to be there
upstate. Like we was going he wanted to everywhere be there. Yeah, right. And there was just like this because it was such a vibe, and it was, yeah, that shit was magical, man. Like it really was. It was,
you almost remember it like it was yesterday, huh?
100%. Like it don't feel like 10 years ago, which is the wild thing, which is the wild.
Vontae, you had a barbecue that summer too
in Mount Vernon
towards the end.
Yep.
Yeah.
To Pop's crib.
Yeah.
I had a little barbecue that summer too. That summer, that barbecue was just like, all right, guys. Like, you know, I don't know what's about to be happening, but we about to have a good time regardless.
Yeah, and it was crazy because and like these were the little nuances and the nuggets of us getting to know each other in a more intimate way, right? So we go to that barbecue at Devante. I think that was your pop's crib, right?
Yeah.
In Mount Vernon. I literally walked past that house just about every single day in high school as I was coming back from my high school, going back home into Mount Vernon.
Full circle.
Never would have pictured a few years later, I would have been in the backyard turnt.
Full circle, yo. Full circle, man.
All the way turn. And for real, it was like, yo, that summer was like, I can't even, yo, sometimes it's difficult to put into words because it was so magical, it was so majestic, it was so euphoric, and it set the foundation for us to the fact that we still here today. The four of us, that is.
Wouldn't you say that summer was the formation of the identity of everything that was to come?
For sure.
Yeah,
it definitely laid the foundation.
What does identity mean, Kwabi? I know you got that thesaurus in your brain. What's the word identity? What does that mean?
Okay, so I think first and foremost, identity has to do with the way each individual sees and perceives themselves, their own psyche, their own individual being, right? And then I think as humans, it's very difficult, even as individualistic as we like to think that we are, it's very difficult to come to any semblance, any notion of identity outside of interactions with other people, outside of interactions with community, outside of interactions with society, right? And I think specifically for our conversation today, what I really want us to talk about and have a constructive conversation about is identity formation within Black Greek life, particularly for young Black men, and particularly for all four of us being alphas, right? And it's like, let's talk a little bit about how our identity formation can be formed and forged around this concept of brotherhood.
Mm-hmm. Like instantly when you talk about my identity, like I start thinking how people could easily correlate like their identity by how they're growing up, right? So like if someone asks like, where you from? You like, I'm from Mount Vernon, I'm from Brooklyn, I'm from the Bronx, I'm from Yonkers, wherever have you. So it's like the people that you do surround yourself with, the community, the where wherever you grow up is going to be a part of your identity. Facts. So like one can say like identity is individualized and it is something that you put on yourself and it is who you are, but you can't deny that your surroundings has an impact on that. You can't deny that.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Nature versus nurture.
So like when I'm thinking about like Black Greek life in general, like I'm thinking about everything. Like I came from Brooklyn, I started from Brooklyn, and I already know like you can talk about like the culture of just like, you know, guys hanging out together from the jump, even like, you know, gangs and shit, even though Greek life has nothing to do with that, but that's like people just hanging out together and just like forming that connection, that bond. And I saw that within, you know, my community, and it was just like it can, you know, it can deter depending on where you're from. So I saw like some of my Black brothers in these, you know, their own type of brotherhood in their own light, and that to them, that's like, you know, the gang life was good, that was it for them. But then once I saw in a collegiate level and I saw the fraternity level and the sorority level and the Greek life level, how it changed into that brotherhood of just professionalism and how you can utilize your connection and those people around you to improve yourself to the better making of amends, right? So like all of that like just kind of it does impact you, and it did change, and it made me more conscious of how I conduct myself, how I surround myself, or who I surround myself with, you know, all that type of issue.
So 10 years later, the summer in which like all four of us bonded, and we're going to get to that specifically and how that shook out. But like based on what you said, Vontae, I want all of us to go around and I'll start off, just talk about what initially attracted us to Alpha, essentially, because we had to answer this question multiple times while we were pursuing membership in the fraternity, right? It's why were we looking to join the fraternity? Why were we looking to join the organization, right? Like, and I think brotherhood is a common theme that often comes up, right? I think at 18 years old, you know, first started looking into it seriously. And then the three of us crossed when we were all 19. I think it became abundantly clear to me on the campus of Pace University that it was a hostile environment towards Black identity. And the university went out of its way to kind of, you know, frankly, sugarcoat things to make it seem like it wasn't as hostile as it actually was. But I think there were multiple occasions and incidents, the largest probably being, the most catastrophic being, the murder of DJ Henry, that showed me that Pace University was not a place that was specifically committed to Black identity formation and the thriving of Black identity, right? So I think what I was seeking in Alpha was essentially a safe space and a haven to be my authentic self and explore in real ways, like what it meant to be a young Black man trying to find myself in an intentional way, because it was clear to me that the place that I decided to go to college wasn't interested in cultivating me in that way. Freshman year particularly, right? Like I tried to go in with the rose-colored glasses, like, oh, you know, everything is cool, the world is not perfect, but you know, it's all good, you know, like we don't have to specifically worry about race too much and things like that. And that shit went out the window first semester. Like all of the optimism that I had went out of the window. And it was abundantly clear to me that this was not a place meant for Black people to thrive, not in the ways in which we wanted to, in the ways in which we were interested. So me seeking out Alpha in a very intentional way was in large part trying to carve out a space for me to find and explore what it means to be a Black man. And I wasn't getting that, frankly, anywhere else in that university.
I mean,
so yeah, I'll throw the question to y'all. Like, why did y'all seek out Alpha in your college years?
I mean, I agree. I mean, instantly when I already knew I was going to be out like since day one. Like I was taking pictures of the Rock, and I was like, I already knew I was part of this step team back in high school where one of the prior step members of Alpha at Cornell, and I saw his jacket and I was like, ooh, what's that pyramid with the ice dripping on it? Like, what's that Sphinx? Like, what's that about? So like he kind of put me on. But long story short, like what you mentioned was that brotherhood, like seeking that brotherhood immediately. I was actually in a session earlier today for school, and it was mentioning like inclusiveness, and they was talking about community. And one thing that when me going into a predominantly white institution, I felt as though that once I found that Black niche, once I found that Black person, I felt more comfortable, woman or man. So I think that was one of the major things when you're in a predominantly white institution where the Greek life will thrive, because that Black community, that minority community is so undervalued or undersaw. It just allows it to kind of be magnified for those who are that minority. So it kind of magnifies me. It's like, oh, these Black people, oh, I'm gonna gravitate toward them because that's my people. That's what I came in there not knowing a single soul. So those are my people. So once I saw these individuals, these guys, these men who were presidents of the university, who were orientation leaders, and all of these people that were essentially were just popping, you know what I mean? Like, who was just out there? And I was like, yo, I want to hang around with these guys and find out that they were alphas, were just a plus. So that kind of gravitated me initially, just to be like, I want to be a part of this brotherhood that established community. And that's what it was for me. And I kind of carried that towards anything in my personal life and my professional life, like making sure that wherever I'm at is a sense of that community, and I can bring that. So that's definitely was my main reason.
Yeah, for me it was a little different. It was interesting because I came into college with a different mindset, where it was, you know, because I know I'm Black, and I wasn't looking to join a Black fraternity initially because I didn't feel like I needed to in order to prove my Blackness. But then, you know, in freshman year, I hung out with everybody. Like, we had a lot of the same friend group.
Hung out
with all the people. And it's funny because I remember distinctly, like, things changing. My mindset changed as we hung out with them. We went to different, you know, fraternities and, like, their parties and whatnot.
Not to cut you off, Sanji, but I remember one of the conversations, like, where I felt like we really bonded, where it was like, and the light bulb kind of went off in my head. It was like, oh, I could fuck with this dude. It was the spring semester. Go ahead, get into it.
I was getting there. It was like, and correct me if I'm not on the same page as you, but I think we are. Like, I remember one night, I woke up one morning and I went and I knocked on your door, and I was like, yo, in this friend group that we had, we were probably one of the only Black people in it. And I remember knocking on your door and I was like, yo, so this other shit ain't it for me. Like, I don't know what else, but I heard there's some alphas on this yard and I'm kind of interested. Like, what's up? Like, what's your thoughts at? Like, because nothing else is really pulling me and attracting me. And, you know, it's different. Like, once I found out that alphas was on the yard and I got to see just how they interacted, the shit that they did, we ran the yard. Like, we were presidents of you know, student government. We host through the best, you know, events, not just parties. We threw those too, but events of substance, you know, like things that actually made a difference to some extent. And it separated it and it opened my eyes. I'm like, yo, it just drew me in naturally. And I remember talking to you about it. And I don't remember the full conversation because my memory sucks ass. But yeah, I remember that. And I kind of felt like it was too late because you and Vontae had already, you know, started pursuing. And I felt like I was a little behind, which is what made that summer so lucrative, at least for me, as far as sealing the deal and making sure that I you know, pursued the decision that changed my life.
That was an important song.
Yeah, no, and like spot on, bro. Like, I remember that conversation almost damn near word for word. And it was just like so refreshing to see another Black man be on the same page, because it was like, it was realizing that, and not to take anything away from, because again, like me and Sungji pretty much had the same friend group our freshman year at Pace, and not to take anything away from them. But at the same time, like being completely frankly honest, it's like there's something different about being Black, particularly right, in a white dominated space that y'all just don't get, that y'all just don't understand.
We'll never.
Right. And it's, yeah, that can bring people, and often does bring people together in a very particular, unique way. Yeah, it's really difficult. It's difficult sometimes to put it into words. But like we know that's there. And it's like when you get that particular insight, you can't ignore it. You can't ignore it. Like, I think, speaking back to the identity formation, it's like we would be lying to ourselves, I think, had we ignored that. So it was like, I was eternally grateful because these were things that were like kind of on my mind for a while. So I was just like so grateful that you came to me and approached me and put it out there the way you did, because it was like, oh yeah, bro, I've been thinking the same shit.
Yeah, word for word, I think that's what you said.
Word. But how about you, Chris? What was you?
Yeah, I think I could pull from what everybody said. I was coming from a different school, you know, a little ways down the street from Pace, Mercy College. And, you know, I could pull from Q and saying that school wasn't for me. It had nothing for me. It offered nothing for me. So I had to carve out a space for myself. And clearly I couldn't do that at Mercy. So, and this is why I could pull from you also, Devante, where I feel like, you know, it was fate. I think a lot of what you said is like, it was fate that you became an alpha. And I think that's what it was for me. It's like the road was leading me there. And it's just something that had to be done. It had to be done for several different reasons, but I would like to focus on, growing up, there wasn't a lot of like influences that I had, you know, especially from Black men. And that was clear in my collegiate career because there was none of that there. And it was ultimately, you know, my demise because Mercy College didn't allow me to finish a goal there. You know, ultimately I did get to finish the goal, but it just goes to show that in this life there are constant barriers, there are constant roadblocks, people pulling you back from things that are meant to happen for you and the challenges that, you know, Black men go through.
Yeah. So truth of the matter is the four of us started our journey towards Alpha together. And unfortunately, only three of us finished together. And I particularly remember, this is like some of the, it's like we come into this thing with a particular set of expectations. And then when those expectations aren't met, the disappointment could be like soul shattering. And like one [S2] Absolutely. [S1] Of the expectations for me was, and I remember the four of us having this conversation, I believe it was during that summer. I think it was in Devante's room when because he was an orientation leader at Pace at the time. And the four of us having a conversation, it was like, okay, we starting this shit together. We going to finish together. And unfortunately, that didn't happen because of circumstances that was completely out of the control of all of us. And I'll just speak on it from like our end. It was when Chris couldn't continue the journey with us.
You could say it, bro. When it got ripped away, you could say it.
Okay, yeah. So when Chris got ripped away from us, that was really difficult for me, for multiple reasons, because I think a few things, like I leaned on Chris in a particular way because, and you know, I know deference is a touchy topic in Black Greek life because it often gets used and weaponized, I think, in really toxic ways, which I want to talk about later on in the episode, but
weaponized.
The fact of the matter is, myself, Sanji, Devante, we were 19 years old going into this shit. In a lot of ways, very blind to a lot of things, not only just about Alpha, but just about life. And Chris being older than us, I felt provided a particular type of knowledge and wisdom that we didn't have access to, that we benefited from. And it's like that being taken away from us really fucked with my psyche. And then us having to adjust our entire group dynamic threw me off in a really particular way where I'm looking back in the 10 years from now, like hindsight, like if we could have went back and did things a little bit differently, it was like, and I don't even know if shit like this was possible, it was like, oh yeah, no, I definitely would have needed some type of professional help with regard to separation anxiety.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's like the challenge, like you guys mentioned, like a challenge of a brotherhood. Like you gotta understand, like there's certain things that's out of your control, out of your power, and nothing is really essentially within your control. And as Black men, we tend to take that personal when we can't control certain situations. So,
and I think, you know, sorry to interrupt. I think that's the key right there. Is like, why is it that it's always Black men that has, you know, just in life in general, have things happen to us, and it seems to be always out of our control.
Okay, if you find the answer, let me know.
Yeah, that's some real shit. That's some real shit. And the fucked up part about it for me was that, like, it's like, talk about identity formation. Like, we went into this shit with four people, and then now there's only three of us. I felt like all of us, in some regard, had to put on an additional hat play an additional role that we didn't necessarily anticipate or foresee going into what we was going into. Because we had a person that was supposed to do that. That's no longer with us.
But then, like, I'm gonna just, I don't know. I my mind gears towards just, like, how we are raised, like you said, as Black men. And, you know, what could we do? Like, you know, I'm thinking about, like, people that are raised without fathers, right? And essentially, they're kind of, they end up just not having to wear the hat, right? They end up having to be the one to be the man of the house or provide for their family, et cetera, et cetera. So in this case, where it's very micro to something that in that scale, but it just instilled that same mentality where as a Black man, we just know how to step up to the plate and just, you know, handle our job. And going in there with the same grit and the same mentality, despite what other people might say, what other people might think, we even us in that individual moment, we're not even thinking really, but we just are very tunnel vision and just very foresighting, just going into that, just like, yo, this is what I'm gonna do and I might get it done.
Yeah, no, and 100%. Yeah, I feel like, go ahead, Sanchi.
I think that moment was, I agree with what you said, Vontae. And I think that moment was the first reality check for me, and the first moment that I realized there's things in life that we can control and things that we can't. And the things that we can't, we gotta learn how to roll with those punches, adapt to the situation, and focus on what we can't control. You know, what we can't control is out of our control, obviously. No point in putting undue stress on it, even though it was hard. Like, do I agree with you? I had to, it was hard having to adapt, you know, to, it's like losing a limb, you know, losing a part of you. We got used to moving with four, and now there's one less of us. So, you know, it was different mindset, different everything. But I think that statement of, you know, or that realization that there's things in life that you can control and things that you can't, the things that you can, do what you can with it, still holds true. Because look, Chris still ended up becoming an alpha, even though something that completely was out of his control came through and, you know, threw a monkey wrench in the system. He still had it in his control to pursue it and pursue it the right way, which he did. And we're able to sit here and tell this story 10 years later, you know, from both ends of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I feel you 100%. Wait, yeah. Before you go, Chris, because I know you got plenty to say about the, like, no, I feel y'all 100%. And it's like, the bottom line is, in concrete reality, the three of us manned up and did what we needed to do in order to do what needed to get done. And at the same time, there's a certain part of my identity that's a optimist to a fault, that's a dreamer to a fault, that can't help but think and wonder about, in the hypothetical, what could have been and what would have been. Right. And it's like Chris put it in the chat, but it's like talking about the Locks, right? The underappreciated member of the Locks, who is Sheik Louche, right? Like, it's like, what the fuck would the Locks be without Sheik? Like, seriously, it's the one that kind of flies under the radar, that doesn't, in my opinion, get the credit and the praise and the recognition and the flowers that he deserves. But it's like, if he's absent in the equation, they're not the same. Right. And there's part of me that can't help but think about that possibility, right? And it's almost like, how do I want to put this? It's everything that we've accomplished so far, the three of us. So, like, there's a part of me that can't help but wonder, like, what we would have been, the different type of group dynamic, even things that may have went left, that may have been different had it been the four of us instead of the three of us. Especially when I consider that the fact that he wasn't with us wasn't his decision to make.
That's the part. Control. Yep, that's the part that I wanted to zero in on there. And something that Sanji said, you know, roll with the punches. I feel like Black men in history have been constantly been told to roll with the punches. Like, get stolen from your village, get on this boat, roll from the punches. Get beat with everything in sight, roll with the punches. Get told you're not good enough to sit at this, you know, diner table, roll with the punches. And it's just, it's been a constant theme in this world.
And, like, low key, that type of shit is traumatic. Like, seriously, like, that's trauma. That's trauma. And I'm going to talk specific, because of course we can bring the conversation to broader society, but I want to talk specifically within black men within the dynamics of brotherhood and black male identity formation. We often don't give each other space to deal with and work through traumatic events. And like, that is really a problem. Because I think essentially what ends up happening is like, we don't give ourselves space to feel. We don't give ourselves space to work through pain and work through emotions, and like in a productive way where it's like we sit with it for a second and then actually do what needs to be done to heal from it. And I'm not sure that that's the best thing for, I'm not sure if that's living up to the ideals of the better making of men.
That's a valid point. I think, I don't know, the thing is maybe years, decades, centuries of conditioning, you know, to think that way, to not put our thoughts and our feelings, you know, on the pedestal, to not ask ourselves, is it okay to feel this way? It's taboo.
Very much so. And just to quickly step off of that, it's just like, I mean, we as men, we have to understand that we're not perfect, but that doesn't mean that we can't be better, right? You mentioned that earlier, like, you know, there's a reason why we were based on this earth for a certain reason. We have to just fulfill that. And like discussing how to be better, with this guy drinking out of the bottle, discussing how to be better is super important. Like using everything that we went through in life, like I know Christian, Sanji, and Kwaji and myself all had moments in life where we questioned a lot of different things, right? So using that questioning, using those thoughts to maneuver and to guide us and to basically steer us into the right way, because we know even though things are not perfect, it's up to our control how to define our own legacy, how to define our own identity, how to define our own life. So that's super important. And that's the challenge. Like, you know, that's a challenge within black men, within brotherhood, like being able to find your individuality. And despite what's going on, you have to make sure that you're your own person.
I think that's a good transition for respect. I think we're talking about challenges here. One of the many things that black men are challenged with is respect. And it's like this constant disrespect coming from literally every angle, even from our own people, our own circle, within our own brotherhood.
The blatant disrespect that happens within the quote unquote brotherhood is it's wild. And I think, one, I'll be the first to admit that I've lived into it. The disrespect that is, I've been guilty of disrespecting brothers, not only within our own sacred fraternity, but other fraternities and things along that nature. And it's not trying to make an excuse for it, but trying to understand it with the sake of being better. I felt like a lot of the times where me personally, like I've fell into those mishaps have been about like living into this toxic understanding of male identity, which doesn't make space for us to feel and deal with our own personal traumas, right? And I think particularly like with one of the objective goals of Alpha being seeking out brotherhood, it's like fam, that's not brotherly, right? Like not making space for someone you claim to love to work through all of their emotional baggage and all of their emotional trauma, not making space for them to heal, not making space for them to come to grips with the reality, like, yo fam, this world is not meant, the world that has been manufactured, that has been created, is not meant for black men to thrive. Not being intentional about creating a space for us to work through that reality, my nigga, that's not brotherly, right? And I think the unfortunate truth of the matter is, like the way we got it written on the agenda is like coming to the realization that even within Alpha, it's like coming to the understanding that, yo, everybody that wears the same letters of you ain't necessarily your brother. Mm-hmm. And it sucks and it hurts to say things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead.
Well, hold on, actually, you know. One thing I would have to say, you was talking about, like, you know, not every brother is your brother, but that's like, that reminds me of just like family. Like, you know, we all got that family member or someone or friend, for instance, that even though we align with them as far as, like, you know, blood or community where we came from, that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, we have to be so connected with them, in the sense that everybody goes through their different paths of their life. So it's like, even though I consider this person my brother or my sister or whatever have you, that doesn't mean that I should have that same expectation, unfortunately, because it's going to allow me to kind of make an excuse, I guess, to like to look at them in a different light. Like, all right, you know, this is my brother. I have expectation, but you can't have expectation on certain individuals because you can't control them. So I say this to say, like, you know, not every brother is your brother, not every sister is your sister, not every person you meet is going to be your lifelong partner, and you just got to adapt and live with that, because that's the way of life, and everyone in your life is some sort of a lesson, you know what I mean? So when I think of Greek life, when I think of brotherhood, when I think of everything, I always go back to, like, my childhood, all those people that I kind of saw and, you know, surrounded myself with, and how our paths just didn't align. And that doesn't mean that that decredits them being who they are as an individual, but it just wasn't my fit, and that's okay. Fuck it.
Yeah, no, I feel you on that 100%, because I think, and this was the particular challenge for me getting into Alpha, was because brotherhood is constantly a word that comes up in Alpha that contributes to the identity formation. And my thing was, if y'all talking about brotherhood, the standard that I'm comparing it to is the relationship with, I only have one biological brother. You know, I got a few cousins that I consider to be brothers as well, but I mean, like, I got one brother. So it's like, we talking about brotherhood, that's the standard for me, right? And it's like, my brother is one of the realest niggas I know, if not the realest.
Word.
And that gets into multiple dynamics of life, right? And I feel like if you're going to be calling yourself a brother, if you are not living up to that standard, if you are not even making an attempt to live up to that standard, you're frankly, I ain't got time for the bullshit. Like, don't waste my time, right? And frankly, I feel like a lot of times, particularly, and I would like to see Chris jump into this as well, it's like, particularly for those of us that came into Alpha on the undergraduate level, niggas be talking about brotherhood as a placeholder for very surface level friendships, and even friendships might be too strong of a word. Like, a lot of the times, niggas just be acquaintances that are convenient to party with and get through things we got to get through with together. And I think like that presented a particular challenge for me, because it was like, yo, don't be calling me your brother if we can't navigate and traverse complex places and complex spaces with each other, even when it's uncomfortable, difficult, and presents challenges that we've necessarily may have not wanted to necessarily venture into, right? And it's just like, what it was for me was, and I think not only have I seen this in our individual chapter, but in chapters throughout Alpha, it's niggas got different ideas and different values about what it means to be a brother. And if there's no type of commonality on those values, on what brotherhood actually means, like, I'm not going to go out of my way to put my time and energy into fostering that relationship.
I think it was just a lot of trauma in childhood and every aspect of life, professionally, external groups, and we're not dealing with it in the proper ways.
And I agree with you 100%, Chris, but like, there's part of me that feels like, especially, you know, I'm not... You know, discretion is key, but I can be completely honest and say that the things that we had to go through to get into Alpha is like, we can endure and sustain ourselves through excruciating circumstances. Having to look yourself in the mirror and admit that, yo, I fucked up here, or I didn't act in the best way here, or I wasn't being my best self here. Frankly, I think is light work compared to what we went through to get into Alpha. And it seems like, I'm gonna just be 100% honest, a lot of niggas that are wearing A5A across their chests ain't willing to go into those spaces. And the brotherhood is suffering because of that.
Well, I think it still follows. You know, with that trauma comes pain, and what you said was beautiful. But you know, I think to some brothers, to some people in general, it's easier to deal with other things than it is to deal with that internal pain.
And excuses are the tools of the weak and the incompetent. Like, seriously, and it's like, well, frankly, well, like, and it got to get to a point where we really need to be honest with ourselves about, like, it's easier to deal with and endure physical pain than to work your way through the mental, psychological, and spiritual pain of healing.
Yeah.
And it's like we default to one as opposed to dealing with the other. And frankly, and like what my concern really is, because again, like we started this whole conversation off about we're having this talk with the intent of being a better school for the better making of men.
Well said.
Right?
Well
said. Avoiding that type of development for Black men is not only detrimental to our fraternity, it's detrimental to the development of Black communities collectively. Because like, if we are consistently turning out Black men that are fearful and afraid and apprehensive to deal with our emotional, psychological baggage, like what type of brothers are we being?
We're not
what type of
up.
Fathers are we being? Yeah, what type of husbands are we being? Like, seriously, like, because like all the fuck we're doing is passing down trauma to generations and generations. Like, oh, you deal with it. Shit. That ain't it.
That I feel like that could be a whole episode within itself, because Black man trauma is real. We all go through that shit. Like, you know, everybody got daddy issues. Everybody got some grandpa issues or something that they experienced growing up. So it's like, in a sense, it's like, not to make an excuse, but what could we do but learn from how we grew up from? You can't wrong somebody from doing what they know.
So here's what I'm going to challenge you, LB. It's like, particularly within Alpha, right? It's in any other situation, particularly when it comes to physical situations, we'll tell niggas to step up to the plate, man up, and Alpha can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you just expect it to find a way to get through it.
Yep.
But when it really comes to seriously looking ourselves in the mirror and dealing with our shit, dealing not only with our trauma, but the ways in which we were guilty of not being brotherly, or we were guilty of not being the best men capable. We were guilty of not handling with our emotional and psychological baggage in the most productive way. This we want to sidestep those things.
I think this is why I'd be saying, like, all Black men need to take therapy at the age of like 11.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah, no, deadass. Deadass.
For real. Like, that's a key.
The fact that you said such a young age is telling. It says everything.
And like, low-key, I think, so one, and again, like, you know, discretion is key, so we're going to be responsible with this, but I think one of the ways that we kind of circumvent and get around doing that type of deep introspective work that needs to be done for us to really be the better making, the school of the better making of men, is like, frankly, we compensate with the physical nature, with sidestepping and avoiding those difficult conversations, that difficult individual and collective work, with the physical nature of our intake process.
Mm-hmm. I got a question.
And hold on, before you ask your question, it's just like real talk, me looking back, and I know hindsight is 2020, 10 years later, yo, that ain't it. That ain't it. Because a lot of times what ends up happening is we bring a lot of brothers into the fold, brothers, quote unquote, that are adept at being physical, but are not necessarily adept at and willing to be brothers. And we got to deal with that.
Word. I mean, my question was just like, kind of just like staring it in a different lens, like in a woman point of view, right? So I'm thinking of just like sororities, and not even sororities, just like Black women in general, right? So how do you guys feel with Black women and their views and how they conceptualize them? Because you talked a lot about the physical aspect, and that's like what defines you as a man, right? So Black women, they're what defines them as a woman, unfortunately, is like their beauty, their career, their achievements. Like, and I've seen personally a lot of women, Greek life, Black, brown, Spanish, all these different aspects of life, they kind of put down another woman, for the lack of better terms, for not having what they have, or for not doing what they're thinking that they do. And I don't think it's only a Black male thing or a Black Greek thing. I think it's just like a Black society thing. So how do you guys feel like about the woman and in their life, and how that impacts their their everyday community.
Important for us, particularly being four Black men in the space, like understanding and acknowledging that we live in a highly patriarchal society. As racist as the world is, it is equally as sexist and patriarchal against women, right? And I think in dealing with that, like, we really got to, as men, understand that it is generally men that set the social norms and set the social rules and standards by which we live and navigate society. Fraternity culture, and like, we're talking about identity formation and things like that. And Vontae, you mentioned that a lot of women in general, and I would even, and again, like, fans of Speakeasy, if you think I'm out of line, if you think I'm out of pocket, particularly since, like,
they 50, always think you're out of pocket, nigga.
That's, which is fine. But no, and I'm open to the feedback and the criticism, especially because more than 50% of our audience are women listeners. Hit us in the DM, let us know. But it feels like to me that particularly within Black Greek life, right, us Black men, particularly us heterosexual Black men, need to be cognizant and aware that a lot of times Black sorority women, because like Vontae, you mentioned this, define their identity by their beauty and their attractiveness, because niggas like us are setting the rules and setting the standards for how this space operates. And a lot of times that means we only fucking with the girl that catches our eye or makes us double take when she walks by. That's only, you know, attractive to us because, you know, she has all of the physical attributes that we're typically looking for. And it's like, not only do we form our own identity around such assumptions, because we are the gatekeepers, it encourages a culture where women are setting their identities around set standards.
That's touchy too. That's touchy because I think what you're saying there is, us men as a whole have one image. Isn't that kind of not true?
No, so I think, all right, so here's where I think there's the disconnect by what you're saying, Brother Chris. It's like, I feel like I'm talking about the world as it is, and you're talking about the world as it should be.
Okay.
Well, and it feels like the world as it is, yeah, particularly within Black Greek life, we have this very fixed notion, this fixed idea of what manhood, of what brotherhood should be. And it's obviously not perfect. But we often try to live into it as if it is perfect. And everyone else is just expected to conform to that ideal, right? But when we start talking about, like, yo, this shit ain't it. This shit ain't it. And it's pretty obvious that it's not it. Because I think one of the clear things, particularly, is, like, me, Sunky, and Devontae came through undergrad. Chris, you came through the grad chat. And I'm sure that there's some type of correlation between this with grad chat, but, like, low key, and I don't know, I might get in trouble for this, but I'm gonna keep it real. It's a lot of times with undergraduate bros, it's like your status and your identity as a man is often defined by not only just the number of women that you slept with, but how attractive the women that you slept with are. And it's like, if we're the gatekeepers, like, what type of impact is that having on women's identity?
I plead the fifth. Sanji, what do you think? I plead the fifth?
Yeah, I mean, Q, you make a valid point. And I mean, for so long, women just had no voice. You know, their voices were silenced by men, and things that standards that were set were made by men, whether it was made bluntly or you know, subconsciously. And that has affected women for so long. And I think we're now, within the past, I would say, two decades, if that, are getting around to a point where women have a voice of their own to stand on and to basically tell men, fuck you, I don't need your shit anymore. So things are changing, and I think for the better. But yeah, you make this an interesting point you bring up.
Listen, I hope you're right, Sunji. Seriously, because I think, like, everything you just said has all types of monumental ramifications, and I think the easiest one to point to is the matter of consent,
right?
Which we should all, and we probably need to have a whole nother episode on, like, what consent is, particularly Black men understanding consent. But in that, it all right. So let's focus particularly on Black male identity formation within Greek life, because I think when we're operating with these really surface level and toxic notions of essentially our identity is tied to, and again, if I'm misspeaking, if any of y'all think I'm bugging when I'm saying shit like this. But I think a lot of times within Black Greek culture, our status within these organizations are defined by our ability to, frankly, have sex with attractive women. I think it puts us in a position to, frankly, disregard authentic standards of brotherhood for the sake of having sex with attractive women. And it's like, again, I'll be the first to admit I've been guilty of that. I've seen other people be guilty of that. It's like, these are the type of things, like, seriously, and like, to shoot the elephant in the room, like, these are the type of things that we need to be able to work through and get past and get beyond if we seriously want to live up to brotherly standards. And I think not doing so is serving to the detriment of the fraternity.
I wouldn't say you're wrong, but disclaimer, I want to make it clear that that's not something that's being expected of us in order to become an alpha as well. I think it's more so like, it just with any other guy circle, it can affect your status among the guys, so to speak, and how you're viewed, you know, in general. But in correlation with alpha, I don't think it's a requirement in order to be an alpha.
I would agree with Sanjay, and I think, you know, just to put it in other words, I think Quadri Q is talking about a culture that may or not be created in certain circles within the fraternity.
What I'm saying is
what you said before about what
how
it
many
should
times
be and what it is.
Yes. How many times have each of us individually and collectively have seen ideas of brotherhood get tossed aside when it came down to, frankly, dealing with or sleeping with an attractive woman? And it's like us not handling those situations, because they occur, and it's only natural that they're going to occur, us not dealing with those scenarios in the best ways oftentimes throws the brotherhood off track. And it gets back into this idea of us not making space to heal, us not making space to grow, us not making space to learn and become better men in authentic ways. Like, the brotherhood is suffering for it.
First, you're right, like 100%. And I think the only thing that really brings up the real discussion are the details, are the, for lack of a better word, exceptions. And I think you said it perfectly earlier, it's what it should be, the way that things should be and the way that things actually are. And I think that line often gets fuzzy.
Okay, so let's get into the details without, again, even with it, you know, we create this platform to be authentic and transparent, but I'm never going to put anybody's personal business out there, right? Like, anything that's not my story to tell, I ain't going to tell. But let's, you know, deal with it. It's all of us, even Chris, you going to Mercy, right? Went to, relatively speaking, small colleges.
Yes.
Right? It's only a matter of time before, you know, people within the same friend groups, or even within, in our particular case, the same fraternity groups, have common interest in women, right? I feel like there's a healthy way to deal with those type of scenarios, especially if maintaining and facilitating and cultivating a brotherhood dynamic is at the forefront of the list, right? A lot of times it's as simple, and again, I'll be completely honest and say that, like, me looking back on this at 29 years old is not how I always thought and how I always operated, right? But like, a part of it is, this is the responsibility of older brothers to teach younger brothers, right? We talk about the better making of men, right? It's, I think there is a responsible way, or there are multiple responsible ways to be brotherly and navigate and deal with those type of spaces as they emerge, right? Like, sometimes it's simply having a conversation with your friend, with your brother. Hey, I'm interested in this particular person. I understand that you have a history with said person. What are your thoughts on this, right? Like, a lot of times it's having that conversation before anything necessarily transpires, not after the fact. And I think it's a two-hold like level of responsibility. Like one brother having the courageousness to actually be forthcoming with the fact that he's interested in a particular person, and then also the other brother like being honest about if you cool with it, say you cool with it. If you not, be honest with like, fam, like I don't know, like yeah, nah, I can't co-sign on that. And I feel like if you're the other brother, if you really respect the brotherhood, if that's really your brother, because like, it's real shit. If my brother is being, and this is the standard by which I'm holding all of this alpha shit to, if my brother is completely honest and forthcoming with me and tells me like, yo, this is a no-go, I'm not sacrificing that for attractive female. Not saying I'm doing it.
Hmm. All right, I feel you. So my question would be just like, just to, I guess, transition with it. I'm that type of person. I'm thinking like, all right, so we said a lot of different things, right? So would you guys do it again? And like, if so, what would you do differently? Or what would you do to make it better? I mean, for me, I can just go ahead and start. I mean, would I do it again? Of course I would do it again because of the connectedness and the collective input that we had on each other, you know, like developing individuals into men. Of course, I would definitely do it again. But like, things I would definitely change is everything that we talked about today. A lot of the mindset behind Black men and behind Greek life and fraternity, and in general, like, and of course, you know, we can't change the past, but the only thing we can do is rewrite the future. You know, we can be that the ones to change the things that we see, and the only way by doing that is having these conversations and by putting it into action, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, look at us, we say we're 10 years from now, there's young men trying to inspire to be like us. And just like, you know, when you look at an individual, a kid, you know, I'm a teacher, and they, you know, you look up to people that you see that are older than you, and you want to be like them in a sense, and you want to grow up like that. So like, us being able to understand that we are shaping society and the future of these young Black men, this young Black woman, and the responsibility that it takes and how to be responsible with it is super important. And like, you know, utilizing those things that we disagreed with, like Quadri's clearly saying a lot of things that he disagreed with, and taking that to, you know, improve it. So yeah, I would definitely do it again. But like, if I'm doing it again, I'm making sure that, well, I mean, I wouldn't be able to have that control, but you know, making sure that those things are just, it's just better for certain things. But that's just my MO.
No, I absolutely agree with you, LB. I would do it again. The reasons it brought me to y'all, you know, like, and not to say that clearly I knew you both, all three. Well, yeah, I knew you guys before Alpha, but it brought a different level of connectedness. And I think the best thing that I got out of it was seeing men, and Black men in particular, lift each other up versus that crabs in a barrel mentality. You know, Vontae, you just got a new job, and the outpour that I see from, you know, not only us, but other bros, even in our chapter, whatever, that are constantly lifting each other up, like, yo, that's what's up. Like, instead of viewing each other as competition, we view each other as goals, you know, as motivation to keep pushing. And if we did anything differently doing it over again, I don't know, I guess push that point across sooner, you know, that this is what the end result looks like, you know, in this brotherhood. These are essentially the arms that you're walking into, the family that you're creating, where you can be your authentic self. You can strive for excellence and not have to worry about looking lame or you know, having somebody else trying to take your crown, so to speak. You know, a lot of us grew up in this city or you know, tough neighborhood, so to speak, and where, you know, essentially being at the top isn't always the best thing. You know, every time you try to make moves to better yourself, somebody else is always trying to bring you down. And a lot of that is hurt people. But I don't regret it. Are there things that I would do differently? Yes. One of them being not being on the same staff as your LB. But I don't know. I think that's, if I had to change one thing, it would definitely be, you know, getting that point across sooner that this is the change, you know, we're the change that we want to see in our communities.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely co-sign everything that Chuck just said. It's, would I do it again? Absolutely. Because in addition to, frankly, primarily the three brothers that are on this call. I could not envision my life without the three of y'all. And then there are other brothers as well that applies to as well. So like, I really could not even envision or picture my life without key relationships that I was able to form through Alpha, right? So that in and of itself is worth everything. And at the same time, because again, we deal with nuance on this podcast, right? Two things can be true at the same time. There are absolutely things that I wish I could go back and do differently. And obviously we can't do that, right? I think the beauty of life is that we have an opportunity to teach younger people better ways forward.
Right, agreed.
Yeah. And I think any day, any opportunity that we have to wake up and put people onto game to say, hey, these are the mistakes that I made. These are the mistakes that we made. It opens up the door for so many new possibilities, mm-hmm. right? Of everything that we can be, particularly like everything and everyone that we can be as Black men, right? And I just hope that my hope is that we can move forward and get past a lot of those obstacles that prevent us from having these type of productive, constructive conversations and implementing the knowledge into our fraternal dynamic. Yeah,
I would absolutely do it again. And I do it in the same way. I think like Devontae said, everything is a lesson and I've learned a lot and I am continuing to learn. And in regards to how I would make the fraternity better, that's definitely a loaded question. But to try and zero down to one thing, I think I would definitely do a lot of what Sanji mentioned in trying my best to open eyes to certain situations and certain things that don't have to be the way they are now, especially the biggest discussion of the night, you know, how we deal with our women.
Facts. Excellent. Yo, LBs, man, I appreciate y'all for coming on and joining us on Speakeasy Black Podcast, man. It was great having y'all. It was absolutely great having y'all. Yo, let the people know where they can... You coming back? Oh, 100%.
I'm coming back. There's a lot of topics. You know, we've been talking, but I got more to say. I'm coming back.
Oh yeah, now we be getting into all of the shits here, man. Yo, let the people know where they can find y'all on the socials.
Word. You can find me Van Gogh, /_ Instagram, Saturn in Reach. You know, you can find me on that's the
Saturn in Reach. Check out that clothing line, yo. Oh, let's we gotta get it. You back to talk about the clothing line, man. My brother is doing some great things. Yo,
we're doing a lot, man. That's what I'm saying. Black man, we don't give up, man. We got a lot under our belt. So yeah, you can find me there. You got Free James on Twitter, all that good stuff.
And I guess you can find me at Vocalist, VOKALIZT.
You got your Instagram back?
For now. But yeah, I'm always down to meet in person, talk to chill people in person. That's how I like to connect.
Right, yeah, we appreciate y'all coming through.
If y'all have some bum ass tattoos that you need removed, holla at your boy.
We are going to conclude this episode with a piece called Autumn Leaves by another brother of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated, the legendary saxophonist of the hard bop era, that is Julian Cannonball Adderley. This track is one of my favorites. The way it changes paces, the horn riffs, just always reminds me of the fall season. And I'm particularly grateful as summer ends, as we enter into the fall season, I always think about the relationship that I was able to create and cultivate almost 10 years ago now with the three gentlemen that I had the pleasure of doing this podcast episode with. So I hope y'all enjoyed this song as much as I do. Here is Autumn Leaves by Julian Cannonball Adderley on the saxophone and his younger brother Nat Adderley on the trumpet. Speakeasy Black Renaissance Podcast.